Thank you. Police Chief Cox, you will lead us in the flags for this evening.
Absolutely. Place the flag, put your right hand over your heart, repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. Please be seated. Roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements this evening?
Honorable Mayor, council members, members of the public, council met in closed session on one item last night, last meeting, and that was evaluation of a city employee position, being the city attorney. After reconvening into open meeting, there were no reportable actions taken.
Very good. Thank you, sir. At this point, the council is going to review the order of the agenda as presented by staff. On our ceremonial calendar, this is item number one. This is a drawing to select the monthly winners for the local economic stimulus program, Shop Local, Shop Loyal campaign. Ms. Chapman.
Honorable Mayor and City Council and members of the public, tonight we're going to do a drawing for 10 winners for our Shop and Dine in Grover Beach promotion. For those of you that do not know, if you shop and dine in Grover Beach and collect 10 stickers on the back of a card, and you get one sticker for each time you shop at a participating merchant, you can be entered into a drawing for $50 in Shop and Dine certificates. And Mr. Mayor, would you like the council to draw tonight?
Sure.
Our first winner is Betty Ashton.
You can thank me later, Betty.
Our second winner is Jennifer Breeden.
You didn't draw my name again.
You didn't pay me.
Our third winner is Steve Bergstrom. Our fourth winner is Janet Wilson. It's hard to put it up too high for you. Our fifth winner is Brian Green.
I'm trying. No, let's change your name. Sorry.
Our sixth winner is Guy King. Our seventh winner is Danielle Bainbridge. Our eighth winner is Nora O'Donnell.
So how about the city attorney and city manager?
Okay. Mr. Kazanowicz. Our ninth winner is Roy Morningstar.
There you go.
And our final winner this evening is Jean Bello.
Nice. 11 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 9, 2011 as Day of the Child. And it says, whereas Saturday, April 9, 2011 will commemorate the Day of the Child celebration, we are all superheroes. Discover the power in you. During Children's Day in the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., a day where children and families can play, learn, and interact with the agencies and programs providing services throughout the county. And whereas the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month is a time to recognize that children's opportunities are our responsibilities and to commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. And whereas the City of Grover Beach recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for that child to learn, and that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life. and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas the activities for this month will provide an opportunity to acknowledge youth and early care and education programs and their dedicated staff, and to raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of such programs. And whereas may we remember to listen and to watch children around us, to have patience, and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Gover Beach hereby proclaims April 2011 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 9, 2011 as Day of the Child. So please come forward.
Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for having me. My name is Sarah Rugg, and I'm the site director for the Fairgrove Bright Futures Program. And I'm also coming on behalf of our other programs in the South County, Grover Beach School and Harlow Bright Futures Program. And I have for all of you guys pins, ribbons, and brochures on behalf of the San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council and the South County YMCA programs. And we want to thank you for supporting children and supporting our programs and our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, and for Debbie. And Mr. Mayor, I just have to tell you that you've come over to my program before for Lights On After School, and they think that you're
well, children ask the darn. What was that?
I'm not going to say what it's for, the certificate.
Well, I did say what it's for.
Okay. Right.
And again, Daryl, thank you so much for living in the community and being involved in your dedication. We really appreciate it. So let's move on to public communications on our agenda. This is an opportunity for members in the community to address the council for any item in the jurisdiction of this council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. Please bear in mind that any items brought up in public communications, we cannot take action on. If there is an item that is actually on the agenda, I would ask you to hold your comments until that item is brought up, as I will give you ample opportunity to speak to the item. So, is there anyone that would like to address the council during public communication? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close it and come back to the council. We have no public hearing items this evening. So how about consent agenda? This is the agenda where we take routine items in a group. So are there any members of the council that would like to pull any item from consent?
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as provided.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, there's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, that concludes our consent agenda. We're going to move into regular business tonight. This is item number 8 on your agenda if you are following along. And this is a presentation regarding a smart meter program. At this point, I am going to recuse myself because I am an employee for Pacific Gas and Electric Company, and I will be handing the gavel over to the Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
(Clears throat) for Margaret Carmen. I believe that's correct. I would like to have both parties sitting over here, please, so that each side can give its viewpoint, and then it would be a more appropriate way for us to ask questions if we have them.
No, that is not the way our procedure is set up. We set up this meeting. We invited PG&E here to make a presentation, and then we will have public comment for all those that wish to make public comment. That is the procedure we have set up, and that's the procedure we will follow.
I would like to beg a difference here. I do believe that at the time I was the one who asked for this information. I did not ask specifically just for PG&E. I asked for information concerning the smart meters. And to me, information means both sides.
Okay, I appreciate your comments.
This is not a comment, this is a request.
Okay, no, your request is denied.
Why?
Because we have this set up with the procedure, and we're going to follow the procedure.
And what is the procedure? To show just one side?
No. We're not going to get into a debate or an argument.
Mr. Mayor Pro Tem,
yes.
Might I suggest that I go ahead and introduce the item?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Do.
Members of the council, as has been noted, this item was a request of the council to receive information by the smart meter program. And for those of you that are aware, the smart meter program is a program to install new meters throughout the county, actually throughout the state. The actual little bit of background about this: the Public Utilities Commission, in response to the 2000-2001 energy crisis, were authorized PG&E to deploy these smart meters, or the smart meter technology. I should say that they're currently in use in various parts of the county. Most of those are being stalled with all new construction, and also are upon the request of the customer. A full deployment of the meters is expected later this summer. The smart meter system collects electric usage data from homes and businesses and transmits it to the PG&E via a wireless network. Electric smart meters are a small 1-watt digital meter that allows two-way communication to the customer and PG&E. Notified by some members of the public that include concerns regarding health impacts, privacy, and increased energy use. You have material in your package, both from PG&E and also submitted via email by Ms. Judy Vick. Staff is aware that some communities have taken action regarding this issue. My suggestion is that you hear from PG&E. Ms. Margaret Carmen has also requested permission to address the council. My suggestion is you hear from PG&E, all others that have an interest in commenting on this issue, and then the council can, based on the information received, determine what course to follow. That course can be many different things, everything from writing a letter, filing this report, or providing staff with additional direction. So with that, if you would, unless you have questions of me, I'd go ahead and introduce Ms. Patricia Wilmore, who will handle the PG&E presentation.
Okay, hold on just a minute. Do we have any questions from staff?
No, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Wilmore, please.
Thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, members of the council. We're happy to be here tonight. As your city manager stated, my name is Patricia Wilmore, and I'm the local area manager for government relations here in San Luis Obispo County. And we're pleased to be able to talk to you about our smart meter program. And with that, I will show you that, as was mentioned in your staff report, the CPUC has directed that the state of California should focus on reducing carbon emissions and also energy efficiency. And with that in mind, we have followed their direction in beginning the installation of smart meters. We have now installed over 7 million of these smart meters throughout our service territory. And this is the basis for what is called building the electrical grid for the 21st century. And this includes having environmental sustainability at a reasonable cost and providing reliable service. Now, you're probably wondering, how does the smart meter help us get toward this goal? Well, what it does is it gives the customer greater control over their energy use. It's not unique to California, although California remains a very ambitious state when it comes to energy goals and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So then what you get when these are installed is better customer service. Now, how is that? It might surprise you to know that at PG&E, we learn about outages primarily through the customer calling us and saying, my power is out, because we don't monitor that individually right now. We just give you your monthly bill. So once we have the smart meter installed, the meter will actually tell us when your power is out. And so then we can address that issue more quickly and get our linemen and transmission guys out more quickly to help you get your power back on, rather than waiting for someone to call us. It gives you greater choice and control. And that is because you can monitor via your own secured website. You can look at your hourly and daily energy usage. And from that, you can decide, well, it seems to me every Tuesday from 8 to 9, I'm using more power. I'm at a council meeting or I'm at another meeting. In your case, it would be a Monday night. What's going on at my house during that time? So you can sort of determine much better what is happening with your energy usage and thereby have greater control. As this slide shows, it has been found that energy usage feedback can actually save the customer consumption by 4 to 12%. Now, I should mention that PG&E greatly promotes energy efficiency, and that is because we are not allowed, by virtue of our being a regulated utility, to actually make a profit on the electricity that we sell. So we have no motivation for you using more. In fact, we want you to use less, and this enables the future in helping you to do that. So this is what you would see, for an example, on your home computer. You'll see the day, the hour, what usage you had, and you might make some choices accordingly. People have used this in a variety of ways. One of the most interesting anecdotes I've heard is a person who had a vacation home, had a smart meter, tracked the usage, knew he wasn't there, and found out that a group of teenagers were actually entering his home Monday through Friday from about 3 to 6 and using his facilities there. So there's some unusual uses for this once you can track your usage on the internet. You can also sign up for energy alerts if you wish. And again, this is optional. As you may know, there is a tiered system to your charges, so that as you get into the third and fourth tier, but they're coming, and if you decide to purchase one, it can talk to the meter. So this is a great and interesting step forward for the future, and again, helping us get toward that smart grid that we've been talking about. So we have installed about 40,000 meters in San Luis Obispo County so far, 81 approximately in Grover Beach, and this is because as someone upgrades, we'll go in and put the smart meter. The rest of the installation in the city is due to be done in June. So about May 23rd, a letter will be mailed to the residents, and it will say, we're coming in a couple weeks with your smart meter, and here's some other facts about it. 2 weeks after that, credentialed installers will come to the home. They'll knock on the door. If there's no one home, they will go ahead and change out the meter. It just takes a couple minutes or less. And then you'll get a door hanger, if you're not there, that explains they've been there, you now have a smart meter. And about 3 months later is when you'll get this kit in the mail and your first bill that's actually a smart meter bill. So people wonder, well, I've got a smart meter, but I still see a meter reader. And that's because it takes some months before it's actually communicating through that radio system. And there another question we'll get about the meter readers, well, what about them? Have they all lost their jobs? Well, no, they haven't. They've actually taken other jobs. They were brought together and said, this is the future. What would you like to do with your career? And many chose other areas in the company to work in, and we're really pleased that that's worked out that way. What about the accuracy of the smart meters? You had in your staff report in your agenda packet, the independent structure group report that showed these to be 100% accurate. I mean, this even went beyond our expectations. Privacy, your information is encrypted. It's absolutely protected, and we are under regulation not to give that out to anyone. If you call us and ask us to look at your hourly usage once you have the smart meter, we will do it. But we're not monitoring it otherwise. You're the only one who's monitoring it. Radio frequency. I have with me tonight two experts so that if you have specific questions on some of these areas, and I neglected to introduce them in the beginning, I will do so now. I have Tom Smith, and he is a customer outreach specialist. He is the one you'll see out in the community doing education centers, open houses, helping your constituents to understand this technology. And I also have with me Michael Herz, their ear, like a cell phone is. They're comparable to a baby monitor in power. And again, these have been around since the 80s, so it isn't anything dramatically new. As I said, we are reaching out to the communities. In the structure group report, they told us that those meters were 100% accurate. But what they also told us was, PG&E, you're not doing a great job of informing the communities about how this technology works and why it's important. And so tonight we appreciate this opportunity to talk to you, and you can look forward to hearing more here in the community of Grover Beach. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Patricia. Do we have any questions of Ms. Woolmore?
Yes, please. I have one. In one of the first slides, it said something about decoupling the charge.
Going back to it.
That is the principle I referred to, where your energy usage is not associated with the money that we make.
I see. Okay.
That's what decoupling refers to.
Okay.
Do you have any questions, Estelle?
Yes, I do. I've noticed here in our packet we do have what is called the smart meter option that's being presented to opt out.
Yes, I'm sorry I neglected to mention that. On March 24th, we did file with the CPUC a proposal for an option. And this is in response to customer requests. And what we have proposed to the CPUC is that customers be given the option to have the radio turned off. And should they choose to do so, that would mean that they would pay a fee to have that done, and they would pay a small additional, well, I shouldn't just call it small, I should say they will pay an additional charge per month, because that means a meter reader would still need to come. So we are waiting. The public comment period is 30 days at the CPUC, and we're awaiting their word. We don't know what timing they will take to let us know if they approve of that option or not. But thank you for that question.
So you have no idea how much this would cost?
I have that information in the proposal, but I don't have that with me. And okay. It will vary depending on a number of factors, so I would hesitate to say in any given case it will be X amount.
And so what about people who already have it in
scientific community in stating that there are no health risks associated with smart meters? But responding to customer concerns, we're suggesting to the CPUC that this might be an option that would address those concerns.
So in essence, somebody who has health concerns is being penalized because of those concerns. Are you aware that actually there is in the scientific community quite a few scientists who believe that EMFs are dangerous, and that actually there were three governors and one mayor who proclaimed an electromagnetic sensitivity awareness month? So my concern for America and for people is that, sure, we have cell phones and we have microwaves, but if we just continue to increase these EMFs, that could potentially cause problems. There's also almost a positive link between autism and EMFs. And autism is something that for a long time people have wondered why it has increased. And they show actually now that the increase in autism can be related to the increase in the EMFs.
Could we have Michael Hurst maybe address some of those comments since he's our EMF expert who's here?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem, council members, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Michael Hurst. I'm the EMF program manager at PG&E. I've been involved in the issue of electromagnetic fields for the last 21 years, following the science and understanding the research that's been done. I am aware of some of the health experts that you refer to in your comments. PG&E, we look to the health agencies that are responsible for evaluating all the research that's been done on issues like this. The World Health Organization, actually the FCC doesn't do the research specifically. They actually enforce the limits. But the FDA, EPA, OSHA, NIOSH, IEEE, NCRP, those are the type of organizations that evaluate the research, look at all research, positive, negative, and make the determination if there should be some safety limit. And the safety limits that the manufacturer of these smart meters has to meet is enforced by the FCC. And we went above and beyond what just the manufacturer tested with the FCC. We hired our own RF expert to evaluate that and make sure that they are below the limits that the FCC set. And we see it 60 times lower than what we encounter as the on here. There's an antenna in the back. We all use wireless technology. Your police force uses wireless technology for emergency communications, radio, TV signals. We depend on radio frequency technology in almost everything we do every day of our lives. So if what you're bringing up is a very big concern, and should that happen, we would certainly look to those health agencies to do what's appropriate, and we would certainly follow their guidance, as we do with the California Public Utilities Commission and the organizations that have the responsibility for that.
But I just wonder, why take something that's already working well, devices that are on our homes and businesses now, and replace them with something that is questionable? Is it just for the purpose of the smart grid? You know, you have to give the American people some credit that if you ask them to reduce their energy use and educate them, they will. Look what happened. People do it when there's a water crisis. So I don't understand why you have to take what's already working well and change them. Also, there has been many concerns over the accuracy, and there's concerns over the response to the public asking, my meter is inaccurate, I think, and that I've heard stories of people who have not had proper consumer response.
I'm sorry to hear that people didn't get their questions answered. We certainly encourage any of our customers and your constituents that have questions, anything dealing with their bill, please get in contact with PG&E. We do have an 800 number where they'll be speaking to someone that's knowledgeable about the smart meter technology, and we can have somebody work with them and on an individual basis determine what's going on, what may have caused an increase. We have people doing that all the time. The structure report, as was mentioned before, was specifically designed to look into the accuracy of the meters. But again, customer situations and issues come up, and we like to work with them and try to help them as much as possible to understand what might be going on. So you bring up a valid concern, and we're certainly here to work with them to help them understand what happens. You know, I know Tom here can talk to you. He talks to customers directly and tries to work with them and help them understand electricity. Interestingly enough, the technology that we're implementing and the smart meter and smart grid, part of its goal is to help educate us as consumers of electricity on what electricity, how much we use, how much does it cost to do something in our lives that uses electricity. PG&E's fault is not understanding that those 6 years.
What about claims that some people have had their bills triple?
I just know of anecdotal evidence and information that people that have worked with those customers where they found in one case it was a pump that had just turned on and was running continuously, not really doing anything, and that was the cause of the customer's bill. As we install smart meters, things are going to happen. Believe it or not, even before we started installing smart meters, we had customers that called us concerned about changes in their bills that had drastically changed over time. I think that was part of the mistake that we made when people started calling us with those concerns. We didn't treat them differently than we had in the past, where we should have, because of the smart meter technology was something new. And, you know, we let that get away from us, and we certainly recognize that we did poorly. We hired 160 people, employees, to specifically address the issue when customers call. So we hope we're giving much better customer service. But you do bring up something that we did not do very well when this first started.
And what about people who have smart meters on their homes now that have been installed because of reconstruction, et cetera, and then they have gone live? Has there been a difference in the readings? I don't see that in here.
I'm not sure what the specific...
What I'm saying is the meter is functioning wired now, and it is a smart meter. When it goes to when you're going to have we become wireless, has there been inaccuracies between that period? So let's say it reads $75 usage, and the same amount of usage suddenly now that it's wireless went to $125. Okay, I don't see anything in here that says that when it went from being just wired to suddenly wireless, it read the same.
In the structure report, they actually took meters that were installed. They look at the accuracy of those. They did side-by testing of the old meters and the new meters. Part of the structure report has a very detailed, I think you got a summary. I'd be happy to see that you get access to the full report if you'd like, and that's where they checked into that. And that was an independent third party that the California Public Utilities Commission hired to review that for us. So that's okay. Probably where that actual comparison and discussion took place.
And just one last thing. Out of curiosity, all these cities and counties that have placed moratoriums, how are you treating them?
Again, I think almost every single one of them, we have installed meters. They have smart meters installed. This will actually be someone coming out to actually turn off the meter itself, to actually work with the customer and show how it's being turned off.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead. I'm done.
Okay. Do you know of any other agencies that may have approached the CPUC with similar concerns?
We've had a number of, I believe, cities and possibly some counties that have sent letters to the CPUC. Certainly, we would encourage people to participate in this process. There's a 30-day comment period that's undergoing right now, and certainly anybody, whether it's customers or governmental agencies that would like to comment, we certainly encourage everybody as stakeholders to participate in this and let them know what your concerns and opinions are. And that's, how the process works with the California Public Utilities Commission, just like I'm sure it does here in the city
right.
of Pacific Grove.
I was really more interested in other agencies like PG&E.
Okay.
If they have petitioned the Public Utilities Commission
No, I'm not aware of any. We have the other utilities in California, both the investor-owned and municipal utilities that are installing smart meters. We also have a number of our water companies, city water departments, installing smart meters also. So that's another technology that's available. In fact, I know the city of San Francisco is using the exact same vendor that we use for our gas smart meters.
Okay. Then just one thing, then what is the deadline then for the CPUC?
It would, for the comment period that's
yes.
open right now, is 30 days after the 24th of March.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
I would now like to open this up for public comments. So anybody in the public that
wishes
to...
Excuse me, I do believe that Dr. The doctor was going to come and speak next.
Please, I'll take care of this. It is open for public comment. Anyone who wishes to come forward and speak, please do so.
It was on the agenda that I have 10 minutes, so I'm taking it that no longer is so.
There was nothing on the agenda that indicated you had 10 minutes. I'm sorry. If you... That's...
I'm sorry, that's
cool.
Just what I received an email from county in 27 cities who have asked for variations of whether we're going to not have them installed at all or have an opt-out option, because there are people, now you've made me really nervous because I don't know how to take 10 into 3, okay? But there have been a lot of complaints in the areas just like Ms. Molnar said, of security, fires, inaccurate billing, health complaints, and health issues. And the reason I have never been politically involved before, and the reason I am now, is I am very, very concerned about, like she mentioned, the cumulative effect of us having, not everybody has a cell phone. I don't have a microwave. A lot of people I know don't have microwaves. But now we're going to have something put on our house that's there 24/7, and PG&E has said it's only going off for 45 seconds a day, and yet there's a lot of other information from people who have not been paid consultants to the PG&E or to the cell phone industry saying that we are definitely getting much more EMFs than they're saying that we're getting, and it's the cumulative effect. And what I'd like to bring to your attention is that there are many agencies who are talking, including the World Health Organization has come out saying we really should not have all the EMFs for the pregnant women and for the children and for us. The European Environmental Agency has said for all governments, the mobile phone industry, and public health to take responsible measures to reduce exposures to EMF, especially to radio frequencies from mobile phones, and particularly exposures to children and young adults who seem to be at risk. This is a big one. The Karolinska Institute, which gives Nobel Prizes, is calling for stricter emission standards to protect public health. The FCC and all the standards we have now, they were made before anybody had an idea that we were going to have wireless all around us. And I've been told, I'm not an expert, but I've been told that the insurance industry has actually said they are not going to pay claims for health issues that are a result of wireless technology. So what are people going to do if, like, indeed, we've already seen that EMF in large quantities causes DNA damage. I have 16 seconds. Okay, I would like, this is what we're asking the council to do, is to please, at least at the minimum, write a letter to the CPUC to oppose consumers having to pay.
Like to come forward?
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council. My name's Deborah Miller. I'm a resident of Grover Beach, and I'm in the health field, and I'm very concerned. We don't know the effects of this cumulative until much later, and often when it's too late. And this seems to be sort of a Aaron Brockovich thing where it's just like steamrolling through. The public is, for the most part, not even aware. And then you'll get something hung on your door that says it happened. So we're only being offered to be penalized for keeping our analog systems. And I really think this warrants a look. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Margaret Hennessy, and I'm the publisher of the Solstice Green Directory here in the Central Coast. And I can assure you, Mr. Nichols, I don't need 3 minutes to say what I need to say, and that is that the whole tone of this meeting tonight with PG&E is really...
Please address the council.
It's really distasteful to me, really distasteful. And I'm wondering what the objection is to have both parties. So I don't need any more time to tell you how disappointed I am at this meeting and how distasteful the whole tone of it was. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Trish Norman. I hadn't actually planned to come to speak this evening. I just came to support my friend, Dr. Margaret Carmen. But I'm also in the healthcare community, holistic healthcare, and I'm just moving back to Grover Beach, literally as we speak. I have a townhome that already has very large power lines running across my windows that I already have concerns about. I think a lot of the points that have already been made in regard to almost a forced cooperation is cause for concern in and of itself. I would also like to address the gentleman who did speak for PG&E and mention that we're in Grover Beach, California, not Pacific Grove, and that the people here locally who tend to, I find, have a lot of immune suppression disorders in our community, possibly because of pesticides. We don't know necessarily. For the choice. So it would be nice to have one in advance and not have it cost us extra money to do so, to protect our health. Thank you.
If you wish to speak, come forward, please.
Hi, my name is Cheshdeen Agnea, and I also have health concerns. I want to feel safe in my home. I don't own a microwave. I don't have satellite TV. I don't have those modern things by choice. So I would like to have a choice without it costing me money. And I also realize that I'm really glad that PG&E and everyone wants to take care of Mother Earth. That's a big concern here. And it seems like we are missing the boat. Everyone should have solar on their roof. And these smart meters, from what I understand, they run one way. So if we put solar on our roofs, they will have to come and exchange them. And that seems to be a waste of manpower, meters, and I don't know what all is involved in it. But I know that that is not a good way to take care of Mother Earth. We need to encourage people to save energy, and we need to encourage the solar industry. We don't need to encourage the smart meter or the wireless pollution that is going on. And if we have a cup of water and we keep dripping in a drop into the beaker or into the cup, it will eventually spill over. We don't know exactly which drop it's going to be. It might be the cell phone, or it might be the microwave, or whatever. But they have already mentioned that if this is approved, then we will have the water meter, then we will have the gas meter. And I don't know what other technology is coming along. You could have cell top, whatever they are called, computers. And it's just too many things that we have a choice over. This one we don't, and I would love to have a choice, and I would love for it not to cost me money. And I'm glad that you guys are here to protect me. After you hear all of the information, I'm sure that you will
in California, providing us fabulous service regarding our energy needs. But I'm very disappointed that we didn't have education about this. Ahead of time. I've talked to a lot of people in the last month, and most people have never even heard of smart meters. So I did a little bit of investigating on the internet, not enough time this month to get into it as much as I would have liked. But I was on the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission for 4 years, and two of the task force that I were assigned to, one of them was for pesticide drift in the South County. Also, the other one was on the application of biosolids to farmland. And those committees, we had experts from Cal Poly, we had scientists that were on the task force with us, and we did some incredible studies. The purpose of the San Luis Obispo Health Commission is to be there for the consumer and for their health needs. And if they have a concern, we've got to step up. And we did that on both of those task forces. We came up with a good conclusion and solution for both sides, and we worked it out. It took 4 years to do it, but we got it done. So I would like to see more information. I would like to see a moratorium. I'm just sad that this has happened so quickly and people couldn't either be educated by PG&E and not have the health fears that they have. I have a great niece that's going to be born this month, and I would hate to think 20 years from now what might happen. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to come forward? There being none, I will close it, bring it back to the council. Do you have anything further to comment on?
Well, actually, I do have one more question. If I could just address Ms. Reddick's comments. The South County Health Commission, I'd like to know, have they weighed in on
that? I was going to ask
either staff or PG&E if they're aware.
The county's public health officer, Dr. Penny Bornstein, has stated that there's no scientific evidence for health concerns. The Health Commission did twice have some information presented about the item. The first, but not specifically the South County Health Commission.
I said Slow County, sorry.
Oh, yeah, Slow County.
I'm probably slurring, I don't know. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Molnar, did you have anything further?
Any questions now? No.
No, discussion.
Oh, discussion now?
Yes.
Okay, so at this point, then, we need to decide where we're going to go on this, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I would suggest, then, that we place this on the agenda so that we can have further public comment and that we have several alternatives for the council to decide on, one being similar to that by the county, the Board of Supervisors, and that we request I would like to see us put forward a moratorium on the installation until AB 37 has been presented and we have it and it's voted on. I'd also like to see the city send, or if we decide to do it, a letter in terms of that if people want to keep their current meters, that they are not switched out and that they're not penalized by having to pay extra money for it.
Okay. Let me check with council. I don't think that's an option. Wouldn't that have to come back to the council for that sort of thing to take place?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, council members, members of the public. At today's meeting, you may direct staff to agendize an item which would then require your action.
That's whether what that I was is asking. Sorry. No, that's what I was asking for, is to be on the agenda.
Whether it is to send a letter, to take some formal kind of action,
yeah,
resolution, ordinance, or any one of those, majority of you today would need to direct us to bring that item back.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I have a little discussion, if I may.
Sure. Please do.
Regarding something that I believe it was Trish Norman said, forced compliance, that does concern me, whereby you must comply or you're penalized. I don't know that we as a body here are going to have a whole lot of force in order to change the way this ball is rolling, but in order to bring forth that concern of our citizens and others. Thank you.
Okay. I think
please don't.
The consensus is that they would like this matter brought back to the council at a future date so that we may determine whether or not a letter should be prepared and who it should go to with reference to the installation of smart meters. Is that appropriate?
If that is the consensus of the council, certainly. Okay. Staff will bring that item. I was conferring with the city manager as to the timing of that.
Actually, we're just, talking about just a letter? I am actually more in favor of the city joining other cities and counties in asking for a moratorium until AB 37.
I'm not in favor of that.
I'm not either.
No. I want a smart meter. I do, and I know other people who do. I want to be able to control what I do in my home, with controlling my cost of energy, and I know that other people do too. I don't want to force others to have it, and I don't want to deny it to those who want it. So that's my position.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be able to support
very good
your position.
Okay, and I agree. So I think we have consensus 2-1 that we will come back to the council with a letter.
Specifically, that letter will
Specifically, what would you like in that draft letter?
Well, what I'd like to see is our opposition to those who prefer to opt out or for whatever reason, that they don't, their concerns, whatever, that they not be penalized.
Okay. And also in that letter, it should say that they can continue to use the meters that they have and that they not be switched out until they sell their homes or they move. Because I would think that, think that that would be kind of not going along with the point of what we're asking for people. So you need to leave their meter alone. If they're going to opt out, you leave their meter alone.
Council.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. What I would recommend with concurrence.
But within the deadline period. April 24th, or 30 days from March 24th.
So is that the desire of the council that you see it at the next meeting?
Well, I think we would have to, otherwise it would have no weight or...
Well, merit. Number one, can it be accomplished within that period of time?
Yes.
Okay, then yes, it will be back.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it. Would you please ask the mayor to come back in now? Okay, I have a request to take a 5-minute break, so we will take a 5-minute break.
I'm going to reconvene the regular meeting for the Gurbee Beach City Council on Monday, April 4th. And I believe we are on item number 9 tonight. And this item is the 2010 annual report on the status of the general plan. Community Development Director Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. The state government code requires that the city council be provided with an annual report on the status of the general plan and the progress in its implementation. The annual report is required to be submitted to the Office of Planning and Research as well as the Department of Housing and Community Development in April of every year so they can see that we're making progress as well, especially regarding the housing element policies. In March, the Planning Commission did review the annual report and they did provide a few suggestions regarding future updates on the scenic routes element and the conservation and open space element. Formalized in January, but most of the work went on in 2010. The application was submitted for the Grover Beach Lodge project, and significant process was made on that project in 2010. Of course, the West Grand Avenue Street Enhancement Project between 2nd and 4th Street was started and completed in 2010. The city has also selected and is working with a developer to construct an affordable housing project on 10th and Farrell, as you know. The city also continues to look at the feasibility of becoming the primary recipient of CDBG funds rather than a sub-recipient of the county. We did continue to implement the home repair loan program with CAPSLO using agency housing set-aside funds. One of the largest, biggest council goals is to continue implementation of the capital improvement program and street improvements, and there were several projects. I think South 4th Street was probably the last major project that was completed in 2010. We also completed the Cleaver Park Master Plan back in early 2010. The Trails Feasibility Study was also completed, And again, we almost completed the bicycle master plan as that was just adopted in January of this year. And last but not least, the city completed its fire consolidation with the formation of the Five Cities Fire Authority. So that's a partial list of the accomplishments, but I think it represents the council's commitment to implementing the city's general plan policies. So with that, staff is recommending the council receive and file this report.
Great. Thank you, Bruce. Any questions of staff?
No.
No.
So I have a question.
I have one.
I'm sorry. Councilmember Bright.
That's okay. And it's just a bit of fluff, but can you remind us what the Quimby Park dedications are and how they come to us and like that? I know it's the rec department, but...
Yeah. It happens with subdivisions of five or more lots, and in that case, a developer has an option. They can actually provide a land that's calculated a value to the city in order for a park to be developed, or we can actually say... we would decline the land and we would take a fee in lieu of that would be able us to be the same amount as the value of the property. So you can either get the land or you could get Quimby fees in lieu and put those in a fund that could be purchased or used for purchases in the future.
So they are used then just for purchase of land?
Quimby, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry, I did not see your hand back in requesting that these elements be updated as time and resources allow. Is that something you've discussed?
Yeah, you know, we all know the open space and conservation element is quite old, and there were some policies that were adopted as part of the land use element that were kind of establishing a basis for that. And at one time, the city actually had a Cal Poly class that provided some information, but they never really got there. So. It's probably something that the council should discuss as part of the next goal setting and again, prioritizing in which we think the council believes would be the most important to move forward with.
Okay, good. So then I think that's something that a discussion we can have in subsequent meetings to discuss which one should be prioritized, because I would think the scope of it, because we can probably clean up noise and open space. Just if nothing else, putting in the current format that we have our other elements. So we'll have that discussion later. Great. Okay. This is a regular business item, and I don't see many members of the public in the audience, so I'm not going to open this up to the public since it's regular business. So let's move on to item number 10, and this is a review of the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control District Zone 3 annual budget.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'll be giving the report. The purpose of this meeting is to allow and enable the council to weigh in on the draft budget for Zone 3. As all of you recall, Zone 3 is a part of the flood control district, which is supervised by the county. Essentially, they're the operators of the Lake Lopez Dam facility. We receive approximately 36% of our water from Lake Lopez. And in essence, first of all, a copy of the draft budget was distributed to all of you. And what that budget reflects is that in FY 11-12, total budget for Zone 3 or the Lake Lopez facility will be or is recommended at $7,860,500. This is down $192,940 from the previous year, which had been $8,053,440. The city of Grover Beach is responsible for just under 15% of the overall cost of the operation, pretty much fixed according to the bond issue that we participated in for the financing of the improvements. Operations and maintenance, our share of that is $569,280. We'll note that probably this is the single area that had the most significant reduction in the overall budget. And they were able to accomplish that by actually reducing personnel within the assigned to the plant. Non-routine operations and maintenance, our share of it is $51,847, and the capital outlay Our share of it is $80,350. I will note that the capital outlay, they're dealing with it a bit differently. By that, I mean the county. In the past, it seemed like they had a laundry list of capital items that they were routinely authorizing as a part of their budget. They have now heard some of what we collectively have said, and they're following a annual target in the capital program of $550,000. So that what that means is, and what they're going to be funding with that capital was actually outlined in the last page of the budget. But what that means is that in some years where a given item is going to cost more than the target allocation, what they're doing is they're setting dollars aside on an annual basis. So that means that the improvement probably won't be done for 2 or 3 years. But they won't exceed the cap, which is somewhat reassuring to us, or at least the budget shows that they won't be exceeding the cap. Other items of note is probably the HCP continues to unfortunately cost a good deal of money. Its cost was estimated at $104,491, and it's up to $176,288. That's the combined for the entire Zone 3. You should note that that increase in cost is largely due to additional environmental work they assume they'll do at about $50,000 in the coming year. This is a new the review at the council level is a new process, should have been happening probably a long time ago, but this is the first of the alternatives that are available to the council. The council could authorize the Zone 3 representative to vote in support of the Zone 3 budget. The council could direct the Zone 3 representative to not support the budget at this unless further revisions are made, or the council could choose to take no action on the budget at this time. And finally, the council could provide staff and the Zone 3 representative with additional direction. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols is the Zone 3 representative. Both the Public Works Director and I are available for any questions you have. Staff is recommending the council authorize the Zone 3 representative at this point to vote in support of the Zone 3 budget. That concludes my staff report. We're available for questions.
Thank you for that. Yes, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Yeah, I would like to add a comment that there is also a technical advisory committee.
Right.
And the technical advisory committee is made up of, and I don't know everybody, I know that you are on it, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, it's the Public Works Director.
Public Works Director is on it also. You're not a member of it?
No.
Who is the members, who are the members on the technical advisory committee?
The technical advisory committee consists of primarily city engineers, and some operators with the county, and then the public at large has a member, and that just happens to be Jim Gehring, who's also our city engineer for water and sewer. So I sit on the board, Dwayne Chisholm, city of Varroa Grande doesn't have a public works director now, so Teresa McClish sits on the board. John Wallace sits on the board for CSA 12.
So I think that's all we have is the local communities, ourselves, Pismo, Arroyo.
And not to be forgotten, Rafael Montemuro
from Oceano, CSD. John Wallace, who represents District 3. The reason I mention that is I think it's important that you understand that the Technical Advisory Committee has also reviewed this budget, and they have gone over it very thoroughly at their meetings, and if I'm not mistaken, they have already approved the budget as it has been presented to us.
Yes, just to add to that, we made a significant number of changes early on, months ago, in reviewing.
The Zone 3 Advisory Committee meets every other month. So we have 6 meetings a year, where the Technical Advisory Committee has 12 meetings per year.
Yes, and there's one additional committee also. There's a finance committee.
That's right. Thank you.
Which consists primarily of city finance directors who meet and look at more of the finance-related aspects, such as bond financing, any loans that are included, rent on facilities at the lake, and various things like that, how things are being paid for.
And they have also already stamped their approval on this, yes, this budget. Thank you.
Councilmember Bright, do you have any questions?
Well, I do. Mainly it's regarding the HCP. Do we have any idea when that thing's going to be finished?
That's close.
What's their latest?
Well, we actually just received what we think is fairly good news. I mean, the process, you don't want to be the leader in a process like this, and to some extent we're the leader in the process with regard to a water reservoir. We're sort of creating the process through the National Marine Fisheries in regards to the Protected Species Act, in specifically steelhead. But we did get a very positive response back, or I should say the county got a positive response back, and the Technical Advisory Committee had that presented to them last month. And at this point, National Marine Fisheries is saying that they're comfortable with the HCP as it's now presented, and they appear to be ready to move on. So the next thing that's going to occur is that we're trying to get a meeting together with the representative from National Marine Fisheries, and at the same time, the county has hired a consultant who is an expert in moving HCPs through the process to do a sort of a peer review and to try to, you know, tell us where are we, how much further, is there any hiccups, anything we should be paying attention to.
Greg, so, a couple of things I'd like to point out in response to the question. Well, the step we're at right now, and you can clarify me if I'm wrong, we're actually at the point of finally getting a complete application, if I'm not mistaken. So that's realistically right. What happens next is the application is nearing completion. The rest of it will take some time because it actually, then the application has to go through the review process, the formal review process.
But once, I think. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Well, I feel like I'm at Saturday Night Live. No. I understand what you're saying. I'm going to hold my comments and questions. Councilmember Munar.
I don't know if you answered this. Have other councils looked at this and passed it? Approved it, this budget?
Pismo Beach has. I don't know if Arroyo Grande has reviewed it yet or not.
Thank you.
Okay. So I've got four questions. Mr. Ray, you had talked about your committee being involved and this budget is reduced as a result of that, and you were saying you had a list of items that you had suggested, that your committee had suggested, of ways to do things better. Can you kind of just give us some examples, maybe just a couple of examples of some of those things?
I can. I'll go off the top of my head a little bit, so maybe hopefully I'll be as correct, correct as possible. But,
okay.
For example, one of the items that had been in the CIP for a number of years, actually being proposed, was the purchase of a tractor to do maintenance on the drying beds. And interestingly enough, a number of the members, it's clearly not a technical issue, but a number of members on the technical advisory committee just happened to be ranchers or have small ranches. And they had recently bought similar tractors, and the cost of the tractor was more than double proposed in the budget, was more than double what they'd recently paid for the same tractor. So, you know, things like that come up, like why are we paying so much? There's a boat that they use in the lagoon, you know, little small items, mm-hmm. but there's a boat that they use in the lagoon that they were recommending replacing at one point in time, and the cost seemed out of scale with what we thought they might need, and they've come up with another way to manage that. The chemical containment system was much more extravagant than what is now being proposed in the capital improvement program. The pigging project that's still proposed, the 2012 budget for that has been reduced significantly because we've recommended that they study the pigging project that was just completed to see how effective it was, so that, you know, we know what what's our bang for the buck we got out of that current pigging project. Maybe it's just not worth it to do another pigging project at this point. So it's little detailed things, but mm-hmm. all in all, you save $30,000 overhead costs, and how they allocate various personnel and departments and even equipment and buildings that are owned by the county and not solely for Zone 3, how they allocate those costs to Zone 3. The technical committee, even though to some extent it's more of a finance committee issue, we're having a hard time as a committee really nailing down how they allocate overhead costs, who we're paying for, what the percentages are, things like that. So we have asked for that information, and the other option would be, if we don't feel like we're getting it presented to us at some point, maybe we would go back to the idea of an audit. But the county appears to be favorable in providing that information to us.
Great, great. And then I want to come back to this habitat conservation plan, and I didn't mean to pick on you, city manager. I think I understand that what you were saying. Some people have started to call into question where this requirement came about. In my former lifetime, I used to be a planner and deal with environmental and deal with, I saw habitat conservation plans kind of come onto the scene. And to my knowledge in our region, I'm thinking Santa Maria, north of Paso Robles, I can only think of perhaps one that has gotten through the process and been approved. So, you know, this is a long and arduous process, 10 plus years, over $1 million, and costs continue to escalate. So now they've hired a consultant to tell them how they're doing in the process. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this. Is this really a requirement, or how did this come about?
I think there's sort of a short answer. It came about as a result of the steelhead salmon being listed as a protected species, as an endangered species. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So roughly the 80s, the Endangered Species Act was enacted, and in that act, it listed that, you know, you have a requirement not only to protect the species and to protect the species habitat, but to even protect potential habitat for the endangered species. So in a nutshell, that's the requirement. The National Marine Fisheries deals with the endangered steelhead trout, and in order to continue to operate the dam.
Yeah, yeah. So clearly it was either a requirement or it was a negotiated situation, because I guess the HCP itself is going to have an EIR, an environmental impact report, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
So they could have opted to do just an environmental and spend 10 years just defining the project, because that's in effect what you've been doing, is spent 10 years defining what that project is. So I'm not going to belabor the point. I just think that we want to be vigilant on this issue that's taken 10 years and now $1 million+, and it continues to be one in which they're increasing funds to keep moving. So I just want to kind of make sure we're all aware of that. And then the last thing I wanted to ask was, there was a discussion about a billing stabilization reserve, and I'm just going to get some clarification on that. Is that having to do with the yearly payments from the city, which in effect have an effect on the rate payers or customers down the road?
I'll answer this to the best of my ability. My understanding is that about 2 years ago, the city of Arroyo Grande was somewhat successful in saying, hey, the CIP can't vary all over the charts. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, there was a billing stabilization reserve that was developed to try to balance out the effects of this wildly varying capital improvement program. Now, with the capital improvement program being somewhat stable at $550,000 a year, and it itself including several reserve accounts being built up. For example, there's a small reserve being built up for projects related to the HCP. You know, if we had to do a stream, a salmon fish ladder or something, there's a reserve being built up within the CIP. So it exists to a small extent still within the CIP, but my understanding is generally it doesn't really exist now that the CIP is somewhat stabilized.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for those answers, and I appreciate the information. So let's see, this is a business item, and I don't see anyone from the public that's here. Or is there, let me open it really quickly. Is there someone I would like to address? I'll second that. Any discussion on the motion?
I'd just like to thank you very much, and please stay vigilant on our behalf. Thank you.
Okay. So looks like there's not a resolution, so I can do this with a voice vote. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. At this point, we had no pooled consent agenda items, and I am going to once again recess the regular council meeting and convene the joint city council improvement agency meeting for Monday, April 4th, 2011. So, Donna, whenever you are ready, roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. Public communication. Is there anyone that would like to address the council/improvement agency? Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the council. Let's move into our consent agenda. And we have one consent agenda for the improvement agency, and this is the minutes of the meeting of February 7th, 2011.
I move that we accept the minutes as published.
I'll second that.
There's a motion. There's a second. There's no additional discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to improvement agency business. This is item IA2. And this is consideration of a regulatory agreement with Vernon and Associates for an affordable housing project located at Farrell Road and South 10th Street. Deputy Director Buckingham. And it looks like General Counsel Cazano is also on deck.
Honorable Chair, members of the board, consistent with the direction from the board in February, staff has been negotiating an agreement with Vernon and Associates for the development of a 5-unit affordable housing project located at the northwest corner of South 10th and Farrell Road. The agreement reflects two key terms that were already approved by the board or discussed at the last meeting. That is, the agency would partner with Mr. Vernon on the project by providing the land and contributing $120,000 in development fees. And in return, Mr. Vernon would secure construction financing and construct a 5-unit low-income project. Negotiations have resulted in a draft agreement with two issues that the board may want to discuss prior to making a final decision. The first issue is related to using the land as collateral for the construction loan. In order for Mr. Vernon to obtain the construction loan, the board is aware that should a default occur and the agency chose not to cure the problem, the bank could proceed with a foreclosure. The second issue is related to market risk associated with fluctuations in the sales price. And elaborated a little bit in the staff report, but currently the price is $157,000 per some information we get from San Luis Obispo County. But that's really just an estimate. There's a lot of things that fluctuate, or there's a lot of variables that go into what would the actual sales price be today. And one of those things is the homeowner association dues, which aren't known at this time. There, I think it's $150 estimate based on the county's estimates. But the biggest variable by far is interest rates. And just to give you an idea, in the last 4 months, interest rates went up a half percentage point, and therefore the price went down about $7,000 from $164,000 to $157,000. Because the low-income buyer, basically based on their income, kind of working backwards, there's only a specific amount of money of their income they can spend on housing costs. And so if the mortgage goes up, if the price goes up, the mortgage has to go down to adjust appropriately. So in the conversation with Mr. Vernon, he's fine with floating the price. So if the price changes and goes up a few thousand dollars, then that's his reward, if you will. If the price goes down, then he has to make up that that risk or the decrease in the market price of the unit. So he's fine with the floating price, and the only thing that he had requested then was that if at the time he goes to sell the units, you know, 9 months, a year from now, if for some reason the price had been reduced to a point where it wouldn't be profitable for him, he's just requested that there would be an opportunity for him to rent the units in the short term. And basically we're supportive of that, but our recommendation to the board is just we'll address that if that problem becomes an issue at that time. So at this point, I just want to hand it over to the city attorney for a couple of comments regarding the agreement itself.
Okay, city attorney.
Thank you. Honorable chair, board members, deputy director, thank you. Just briefly attached is a draft agreement that's before you. We're bringing this for your approval and authorization. That agreement may change format in some aspects, some minor units, which we may have some non-substantive changes to. I just wanted to make you aware that the agreement, basically what we're requesting at this point is your authorization to enter into the agreement with the deal points that were outlined and with some minor modifications subject to the approval of executive director and myself.
Okay, thank you. So let's see if there's any questions. Councilmember Monar, you have any questions?
In the issue of homeowners' fees, who collects those? Is there a
association?
You know, is there association, and who runs the association? Because I know that homeowner associations can't have many problems.
The association would be the one responsible. In this case, five units, you'd have five members in the association. But I think it's important to point out that as a five-unit project, it does require Department of Real Estate, DRE, a state department. They'll have to submit a budget, the developer, and they review that. And there are certain minimum costs that the state has basically set. They want to make sure that reserves are adequate, so when the roof needs to be replaced in 30 years, their money's available. So really the DRE is the one that sets that amount, but then ultimately it's up to the association to collect that.
Okay. Because just we don't want to end up with a property that starts to look blighted either. And if you have, if they are, do become rentals because of the market, who is responsible then for the association fees?
Well, in this case, the unit ownership would remain with Mr. Vernon. He would be renting them, so he would be the responsible party. Again, we're speculating a little bit, but the intent is not for it to be long-term in the case. He was just looking for some ability or flexibility if the sales price dropped too low.
And then I don't know if this was discussed before, but who does the approval of the purchasers of the property?
Basically, the lending institution. They would qualify income just like anybody else. It's just that they have to do it within the parameters of low income range, which is up to 80% of.
Is a project that is a for sale project.
Yes.
Okay. There will be a period of time where not all five units are going to sell at the same time. As long as the owner of the project, the developer, is still in title possession of a unit, technically speaking, the association doesn't engage. And depending again on the DR, depending on what is approved, DRE will approve. And I believe if you have majority, if three of the five are sold, I think you can begin initiate the collection of dues and the function of the association with the owner being the having the last two units as being a member. But we are not contemplating a rental project. This project is, and the agreement is drafted as a for sale project. If circumstances change where that becomes infeasible, then as
Mr. Buckingham identified, we would come back to you for further direction.
Okay, great. Thanks for that clarification. Let me let you finish your questions.
The only question I have is if we do put this clause in the agreement that allows him under certain circumstances to use them as rentals, will there be a time limit on that?
We're not.
We are not contemplating.
I know we're not contemplating, but you're indicating
we're not
going to
put it in the agreement.
That would be a substantive change. I would not recommend inserting that in the agreement.
Okay, so the agreement does not contemplate rentals.
Then it'd come back to us.
Then it will be an amendment or an addendum to the agreement?
Yes.
If first of all, if the agency approves it, and second, if he comes before us for that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Councilmember Bright?
No questions, thank you.
Okay, I have a bunch.
Of course.
So, nice job on the staff reporting agreement and getting this back to us, because clearly we would like to obviously help produce low-income, more affordable housing in this community. And we knew this is going to be a creative project, and the economy dictates such happens. So I want to talk about the issue of land as collateral. Now, is it envisioned that the agency would, in fact, transfer title and a trustee to the owner or the builder?
No. Not for the purposes of the loan. Ultimately, yes. So the interest is joint. There is not a lot of interest in basically abandoning the project, because then everybody loses. So that's why staff, even though we do give up some control over the property prior to the time that certificates of occupancy are being issued for these units, it is staff's recommendation that the risk involved is such that we are not opposed to agreeing or recommending that the agency agrees to that term in the agreement.
Okay. So then I had a question here. I was going to go down the road of, with subdivision improvements, you typically would require a bond or some sort of other surety or guarantee, but I guess that's really not something that is being contemplated in this particular instance. Because I think when you've talked about it, should the owner foreclose, the bank obviously is going to look to the property as collateral, and if the agency doesn't find a way to produce funds to hire someone to build the project, then obviously it is at risk of being foreclosed on and the bank taking possession.
That is correct.
Okay. So then the question of this on the market risk. So obviously I don't have a problem with the Mr. Vernon looking to reduce his risk. I mean, I think that's obviously all what we're all trying to do. I'm just wondering, I know that Bruce, you had talked about the real sensitive nature of the interest rates on these units, and if it goes up a percentage point or half a percentage point, that in effect the cost of the unit goes down. So I'm just wondering, do we expect a lot of shift in the prices, especially since what we're going by are HUD standards or county standards with respect to, one, the income of the families, and two, the maximum price that can be charged for the unit?
Well, if the issue is volatility interest rates, I mean, that's I only wish I knew the answer.
Okay.
I was just trying to point out that, again, even for the HOA dues, it's $150 a month is the estimate. Well, by the time he goes through the DRE process, let's say it's $250. Well, that's $100 less that can be spent on the mortgage. So it's just making the council aware and knowing, understanding what Mr. Vernon's risk or reward is, depending on that interest rate fluctuation.
So, and we're certain that the Department of Real Estate is going to require that this be an HOA
for those.
Okay. And Bruce, in any of the discussions, whether it's with Mr. Vernon or with staff, has there been some discussion about, are there going to be opportunities down the road that, A, the agency either buys him out, or B, we bring in a nonprofit agency such as Housing Trust Fund or People Self-Help to basically buy this individual out? Had that even been contemplated?
Not at all. I mean, really, Mr. Vernon's intent is to build them as quickly as possible and sell them to qualified low-income buyers as soon as possible. So in which case, then, that responsibility is taken on by the property owners.
Okay.
As was the case with Habitat for Humanity is the best example.
Yeah, because I was going to add that, and thank you for that, because my question was going to be how much, what's going to be the cost to build the units, what's he putting in his performer, and then how long does he expect to take to build them? So if we're able to work through the agreement and everything is in order, we obviously still have to get through the entitlement process. Is this something that could be accomplished this year?
I mean, by all means, when given, if given the approval, he's going to move forward with the process as quickly as possible. So getting to, depending on when he submits, I mean, we're going to expedite and get him to the Planning Commission and then ultimately the City Council, because the Council has to review this project as well. So, at which point, I think he's been estimating 6 months for a construction time frame. So.
Okay. And I think Councilmember Monard talked about the approval of purchasers, and I'm hoping that there's an opportunity for Mr. Vernon to connect Mr. Vernon with, let's say, People Self-Help or one of the other agencies that may have a list of folks who have been pre-qualified.
And he has been working with the Housing Trust Fund.
Perfect. Okay. Those are all of my questions. Thank you.
I have one more question.
Yes, Mayor Pro Tem.
Remembering when this was back before us, and you are using the figure of $157,000, that's for a three-bedroom unit, and he's talking about five units on this one piece of property. Are they all scheduled to be three-bedroom units?
Yes. They're, at least conceptually, it's a three-story unit, so you have a entry and a bedroom on the downstairs, living kitchen on the middle, and two bedrooms on the third level.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. This is a business item, and I'm not seeing anyone interested. I'm not going to open this up because it is regular business. Is someone prepared?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to our City Council Improvement Agency business. This is item CCIA1, and this is the fiscal year 10 comprehensive annual financial report. Administrative Services Director and Finance Officer Chapman. You got a long title.
At times. Honorable Mayor and City Council, Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. Each year, the city is audited by an independent audit firm. The audit includes both the city and the improvement agency. The audit was performed by Moss Levy Hartzheim of Santa Maria, and as part of the annual audit process, a comprehensive annual financial report is prepared. Also, the Citizens Oversight Committee met on March 28th to review the financial report and the revenues and expenditures associated with the 0.5% sales tax add-on. One of the auditors was expected to be here tonight to answer questions, but he ended up being unable to be here because his first child is being born. Staff recommends that the council and the agency receive and file the fiscal year 10 comprehensive annual financial report, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman. Any questions of staff?
No.
No? Okay.
Nope.
Again, this is a business item. I'm not going to open this up to the public. So if there is there any additional discussion, or is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
Okay, I will. I make a motion that the City Council Agency receive and file the fiscal year 10 comprehensive annual financial report.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, this is a voice for all in favor.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to item CCIA2. This is a review of sale of city-owned property to the agency. City Manager, Executive Director Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor and Chair and members of the Board and City Council. As you recall, the city and the agency have collaborated over the last couple of years in a city-owned piece of property to the agency. Obviously, the purpose of selling the properties is to both satisfy a financial concern as well as produce affordable housing. The agency is currently completing the project, as we know, on 10th and 11th to the sale of property. The first piece of property is actually 920 Brighton Avenue. It's roughly a 6,250 square feet. Its current use is as a community garden. The benefit of possibly using this site is we have other locations for the community garden. It's not like it's sacrosanct at that one particular place. There are other parklands that could accommodate the community garden, as well as we have a piece of property along, I believe it is 6th and between Long Branch and Seabright that might fit that well. The other part about this is that if we're going to put affordable housing someplace, what better place to put it than in a park where it can be a family-oriented development. The other two pieces of property include the current Cleaver property, which is located, as you know, on South 13th Street. This has 35,750 square feet. The status is that it's currently vacant. And as you know, the city completed a master plan for a community facility on that site. However, we recently attempted to find financing for it, and we're unable to do so. The other caveat with this particular piece of property is that the actual deed does restrict it for its use as a recreation facility or parks facility, but if the city chooses not to actually use it for that purpose, then the property is transferred to a veterans organization. Staff believes that we could have some discussion with a veterans organization and maybe be able to reach an accommodation before, and that's what we'd have to do before proceeding with the sale of that property. The final one is one on South 13th Street. This one is, again, fairly sizable. It's almost 30,000 square feet. It's an underutilized drainage basin that sits adjacent to the Kukui facility. We believe that at least half of that particular problem on the remaining two pieces of property that would then be a part of next fiscal year's budget. That concludes my staff report.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Any questions of staff?
I have a
question.
Councilmember
Munar.
Please. So the purpose of the, so this property, these properties, one of them, if we choose, would be sold to the improvement agency, mm-hmm, and it would mm-hmm. be a similar situation then with like Vernon, correct?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Where there would someone develop it for low-income housing.
Right.
The property down there by the, unless I'm confused, when we have the discussion about having an area available for emergency housing, remember that? Wasn't that the area down there by Okui that we had designated would be?
I think it wasn't quite that far south. I think it was more on the northern side, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And you've instructed us, in fact, you haven't quite finalized that. We need to bring that back to you anyway.
Okay, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to confuse
And that's no, actually north of Highland, correct?
Right.
Is it okay? All right.
Yeah,
okay.
And west. That's okay. Right.
So tonight we're supposed to pick one of these three. Is that
well,
what it is?
Well, the first I would give us direction to proceed on the one this fiscal year, and then select one of the two for us to work with in the next fiscal year.
Okay. And your recommendation is to start with Brighton.
Brighton. That's
okay.
Correct.
Where the community garden is right now.
That is correct.
I've already seen a sign next to the
Exploration Station.
Yes. That said that would be a future community garden. So that is proposed where you would move that garden
well,
to?
Well, it's a possibility we could do something jointly there.
Okay. Okay. And then Cleaver Park. So how would it work with the veterans organization? Was there a time frame for that particular piece of property? It had to be developed into a park by a certain time?
As I recall, there is no time frame.
Okay. But you're recommending that to be the second one, even?
Actually, it is listed here as second. That's the council's call.
Okay. So, in other words, we're dropping the idea of trying to develop it into a park at this time.
You would be if you provided us with that direction. You would at least want us to conduct the discussion with the veterans group.
The executive director and the city manager. One, that we receive affirmative direction on our first choice as far as to move forward with the transfer of the property in this fiscal year, or any of the other choices, but staff recommends Brighton as the choice. And secondly, we're not looking for a specific 100% that we're going to do the next one next year, but basically of the two remaining, I think we would like the direction from the council to say, initiate inquiries regarding this property versus this property. I think that if Cleaver Park was the direction that the board and the council wishes to proceed, I think the logical conversation with the veterans of foreign wars would be, what kind of a financial arrangement would you be interested in, if at all, if we were to use this property for affordable housing, or what kind of a relationship we could enter into that would still not violate the restrictions of the deed, but would allow the city to draw some financial benefit, and more importantly, have that property be dedicated for affordable housing.
Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem?
No, I have no.
Councilmember Wright?
No, I have comments, but no questions. Thank you.
Okay. This is a business item. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, we bring it back. So, Councilmember Bright, why don't you start with your comments?
Thank you. In my opinion, I believe that the Brighton property is the most logical answer, particularly if we're talking about affordable housing. As you said, that's the perfect place for it to be, I think. Regarding Cleaver Park, I just don't see that as really a feasible avenue at all, personally. So my druthers would be Brighton and then the 13th Street property later on.
Okay.
That's my comment.
Councilman Monar, comments?
Actually, I agree. I think we should leave Cleaver Park alone for right now and then change the order to 1, 3, and 2.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
I think Cleaver property, if the the Veterans Association or organization, I don't think they have any interest with the veterans. So I'd like to see that as a number two piece of property and see where it goes, at least for discussion purposes. Then it would come back to us with whatever comes out of those discussions.
Okay. Well, I thought everyone's going to be on the same page, but let me weigh in here. I agree with Brighton. I think there's been some really good points made. And thank you, Councilmember Monar, for certainly recognizing the Exploration Station had a community garden, so there's an opportunity to partner. And I think given that there's a house that breaks it up that we don't own, I know that house changed hands several years ago. So it limits our opportunities for creating contiguous parklands, and it does make sense for affordable housing. I think the other thing I would suggest is community gardens. I think we talked about Ace and Ramona. There may be some opportunities, maybe some small plots or whatever throughout in some of the other parks throughout the area. That way you can have these community gardens in different sections of the city. So it may be a more effective and efficient use of land that really gets it out into the community. So I'm okay with making that the first priority and moving forward. The Cleaver Park property, I will tell you, I know this issue had come up before, and the Park and Rec Commission had discussed it prior. I had actually contacted someone, an executive director or someone with the VFW, more than a year ago to ask them if that is even a concept that they would contemplate. and the information that I was given, and it could have changed, it's been such a long time, but they are open to the concept of a joint sale and a joint benefit for them and the city. Apparently they get this all the time, and apparently it turns out to be quite a labor and sense of effort for them to take land and then find a way to sell it or develop it. And so I think there was some motivation there, but I can't speak to today. So I think there's that. And then South 13th goes without saying, it can be reconfigured and redesigned to deal with drainage and the housing capacity. So kind of the way I see it is, and one, the first priority I think is good. I don't feel strongly one way or the other on the other two. I would just say that, you know, if we decide to go with South 13th as the second option, that's fine, but we don't eliminate any of them, and we give staff some direction. Well, you know, and that's an interesting one. I don't know, and quite honestly, should it all be affordable housing? Should some of it have some commercial value? I mean, that's something that...
Oh, mixed use.
Or mixed use, yeah. So that's a detail that we really would have to get into, have staff investigate.
So since it's been dedicated, I mean, the property was dedicated for use as parks and recreation facility, you're saying that if we sold it, it wouldn't have to be used as...
Yeah, because I think, and the city attorney, you can correct this, because the way I think I understand it, and I think it's what's been said, is if the city pursues... It basically came to the city and said, hey, you have to develop this as a park or park facilities. If you don't do that, then it goes to the VFW, mm-hmm. but they don't have the same restrictions.
Oh,
the city
they
does.
Don't.
No.
I see. Okay, that's the piece of the puzzle I was missing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Then why would they be willing to share the sale of it?
I think they are not an agency that is designed to do these sort of things, and so I think they do see the benefit of having someone else kind of take a lead position rather than amassing all these massive quantities of property. But you know, I think that's the first call. If they say, hey, we're not interested, we're done. Right?
Okay.
You know, I can't really speak to their motivation, you know, but I think it's worth a call.
Sure. I agree. Right. Sure, why not? The more information, the better.
I agree. Okay, so then the recommended action is to direct staff to initiate the process to sell 920 Brighton to the agency, and then provide some additional direction. So would someone like to make a motion on this item?
Okay. You sure. Okay. Then I'll make a motion that... the council direct the sale of Brighton Avenue to the agency.
Okay.
And the direction.
And then are we? And so then the direction.
Oh, for future.
Right.
Okay. To look to additional information on the Cleaver property, and not eliminate either one of those properties.
Okay.
I second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second, and I believe this is a voice vote. So all in favor?
from the district, and they also happen to be the representative from Oceano and the alternate, both to the sanitation district. They did have understanding that Lori Angelo, who was the vice president of the Oceano Community Service District, will be the temporary representative. And they apparently are scheduling another meeting later this month, and I'm not sure what the date is, at which time they plan on making two appointments to the sanitation or to the Oceano Community Service District Board. And from that, they will then select a new representative and alternate to the sanitation district. And we also had a request from this council to have a further report on the sanitation district and its operations right now. And I believe staff has made arrangements with Mr. Wallace to come to our next meeting, at which time he will give us a rundown on the current status of the sanitation district and its operations. That's it.
That's it. Okay. Very good. And let's see, I don't have anything to report tonight. The SLOCOG and the RTA meeting are actually April 6th, so on Wednesday, so I'll bring you back a report then. And the Five Cities Fire Joint Powers Authority, there's nothing new to report since the last time I gave you a report, so I will update you when I get more information. So we have no council member items on tonight's agenda. How about council communications? Councilmember Monar, anything you want to communicate?
No.
Nope. Councilmember Bright.
I'd just like to congratulate Anita Schauer and her new husband. They were married, and I happened to see it on Facebook. It was really funny. It was very cute. I laughed. I cried. It was great.
Wow. I had heard a rumor, but rumor no more, apparently.
Mm-mm.
Council, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, do you have anything you want to communicate?
No, sir, I do not.
The only thing that I did want to bring up to the council and to the community, I'm sure we've all been at least following the incident in Rio Grande as best we can, knowing that what we're receiving is information through the media. It has been brought to my attention as they have changed the date that they are... And I'm not even going to talk on the legal side because I know that they are being assisted by the FBI Department of Justice. But I also understand that they are coordinating with the Santa Maria Lama, that we are one community. Our children go to the same junior highs and same high schools. They are play on the same sports teams. And so I do plan on being at this event, and hopefully those of you sitting up here can find time to be there as well as those in the community. So that's all I wanted to communicate. City Manager, do you have any reports or comments?
Just a brief legislative update. As you know, the elimination of redevelopment agency is still on the board, so to speak. But at this point, the Assembly and the Senate appear to be reluctant to take action on it. And so consequently, while the future remains uncertain, at least it looks a little bit more favorable than I would have said 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I can only encourage folks out in the community to continue communicating with the legislators and assuring them that our interests are to see redevelopment maintained.
Very good, and I would echo those comments so that we stay involved in the community. Also stays involved. I was talking to Dave Mullenix of the League of California Cities, and I know that they are contemplating a redevelopment workshop, because what it seems to be, what everyone's finding out, is that there's not a lot of folks who really understand redevelopment. There's a lot of folks in the business community who don't understand how it works and the benefits that it brings. So there may be, I believe there's still an opportunity. So if something like that does get on the books and start being planned, I'll let you know, and I'm sure Dave will be in contact with everyone as well.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. So I was hoping we probably should have thought of that a while back, but
like PG&E.
There's a lot on our table. There's a lot on everybody's plates, I'm sure. City Attorney, you have any reports or comments? Okay, and do you want to go ahead and cover our closed session tonight?
Certainly, the council will meet in closed session on one item, and that's negotiation direction to the labor negotiation on all represented and unrepresented groups.
Very good. So we are going to recess into closed session.